Welcome back to Forigins, where a guest host and I reveal to you the fake and completely made-up origins of things you do or don't encounter in everyday life. My name is Richard Leverman, and I'll be your host.
Forigins are responsible in any way for misconceptions about any of the topics discussed on the show or how the history of the world in general. If you'd like to learn the truth about anything ever, please consider a show of importance. Just kidding, don't actually listen to the shows. We need your patronage. Thank you.
Hello, listeners. Here today, I have the world's leading expert on the criminally sweet, Rochester Arlson. Today's episode is a real treat, my friends, as we have an original eyewitness to the origin of today's topic, lollipops.
Thank you for the warm greeting, young man. It is a treat to me to be on your radio show.
Podcast. Before we tell the story, do you want to give us a little background information on who you are and what you did before retirement?
Of course. Hello, I'm Rochester Arlson. Richard, you flatter me with the whole world's leading expert, but my expertise is not scholarly. It was a mere happenstance of experience. I'm a retired private eye and also the founder and owner of Arlson Suites. The topic we shall discuss today is the case that connected my two main enjoyments. Though I should mention I also enjoy playing chess with my grandchildren and relaxing next to the gramophone on Sunday evenings. Did I mention that I am 87 years old?
You heard that right, listeners. Rochester is a valued elderly citizen of our country. And he mentioned off-air that he is lucky enough that he has seen Casablanca opening night. All right, Rochester, shall we begin the story?
Oh, yes. The scene starts in 1956. I was an ambitious young man. At the time, I had the dream of crime-solving like Sam Spade from The Maltese Falcon, my favorite novel. I decided to start my business in the booming town of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I decided on Harrisburg because where there's people, there's crime. I was hungry for business, but at the start, calls came few and short.
And what would those early calls entail?
Oh, there were kids who had lost their pet dog, wives believing that their husbands were cheating on them, and the occasional person sleeping on top of a refrigerator outdoors, which is a crime in Pennsylvania. But nothing all too thrilling.
Oh, that sounds a bit boring.
Well, you might consider it dull, but I enjoyed it, boring as it may have been. Business, however, hit a slump a few years after I started doing investigations. People just stopped needing private eyes. I was about to go bankrupt and close up shop when one day a newly formed health advocacy association offered me a case. My job was to go undercover, investigate a candy shop named Jimbo's, of all places.
Okay, why did they need a private eye to investigate that?
Oh, well, they had certain suspicions about that place. James Hawthorne, the owner and sole employee of the shop, was a shady man. His past record was unclear, as if it had been tampered with. Suffice it to say that the man did not want his history to be known. Also, the shop had very few returning customers. That is, the few customers that went there never returned. Now you may be thinking, Jess, for that is what my close friends call me, and Richard, being on the radio with you, I consider you a friend. They may say, what does this man's shadiness and the shadiness of his shop have to do with health advocacy? Well, they suspected from an anonymous tip that the source of this shadiness had something to do with improper ingredients in the candies.
Okay, but why didn't they just call the cops?
Well, you see, there was not enough evidence to convict. The children who disappeared were reported to have been seen after their visit to the candy shop, so there was no solid connection between Jimbo's and the disappearances. James acted shady despite his too clean record, but there is no law against that. The laws of this fine country demand that there be probable cause. In Mr. Hawthorne's case, there was no probable cause. That left the new Pennsylvania Health Advocacy Association with very few options. Me.
All right, Rochester. I think I'm going to stop you right there for a second. That is a suitably suspenseful moment. Folks, we're going to be right back after our sponsor break.
Have you ever been making toast with chocolate spread? Has that spread ever tasted too chocolatey to you? Are you missing the real flavor from this breakfast delight? You no longer have to worry. Chocolate butter is here to brighten your day. With our unique mixture of chocolate and butter, we happily present the world's best chocolate spread. It melts and spreads just like warm butter, but with a chocolatey twist. Buy it now at betterthanbutter.com, the real flavor of America.
And we are back. So, Rochester, how did you begin your infiltration?
So, I thought about my options and I figured becoming a janitor wouldn't be a bad choice. I could see a lot of the operations in this business when I didn't have to get down and get my hands dirty and participate in any of James's crimes. However, the first big challenge was actually getting James to hire me.
Oh yeah, and what made it such a challenge?
Well, from what I've told you, you know that Jim was a very private individual. He clearly had something to hide and wouldn't just hire any random stranger.
So how'd you tackle that? I know that if I got to a bear like that, I'd just call the PHAA and tell them they could have their money back.
Oh, Richard, I'm sure you would have persevered. You seem like a very fine young man. Well, I hesitate to tell you this next part, but hopefully they won't put an old man in jail for a crime so old. What I did was not strictly legal, you see. It's not like I was planting evidence or anything, but I used a bit of weaponized psychology to make James feel tired, overwhelmed, and in need of some help. After only about a week of this, my efforts paid off, and he put out a help wanted sign. I applied, and I got the job.
It's pretty resourceful of you. Tell me a bit more about this weaponized psychology.
Well, you see, Richard, young kids will do just about anything for a shiny nickel. Nobody knows how to grab up a place more than kids.
Oh, wow. Don't think you need to go any further than that. Tell me about your first day on the job.
Well, it was pretty normal, actually. Since I'd used so much time getting the job, it was difficult not to want to go and act. But I restrained myself. It was hard, though. My career as a private eye was in danger, and I wasn't actually doing anything. I reminded myself that I needed to observe and plan in order to be the most effective, though. Observing was difficult, however. James wouldn't let me into the kitchen or the basement. James was an odd fellow. He wouldn't let me clean alone after shop hours for the first week of working there.
Sounds rather intimidating.
It was, at first, but I sort of got used to it. After the first week or so, though, he trusted me enough to have a key to the shop so I could stay and clean late. But he only gave me a key to the front door. The kitchen and basement had different locks. It was at this point that I knew he was hiding something illegal.
Well, of course, who's that secretive about a kitchen and a basement?
My thoughts, exactly. I asked him on my second day why he wouldn't let me clean the basement or kitchen. He responded with some half-hearted lie about dangerous machinery that he only trusted himself to handle. It was also around this time that I got a few calls about more missing children. Two children had already disappeared. This is what originally tipped off the PHAA to this in the first place. Now I got some calls about two more disappearances. The stories were about the same for both. The families had gone out for a fun day, finished with the trip to Jimbo's for a treat. And on the way home, the kids who had chosen the lollygags as their treat were strangely silent. Parents didn't hear a peep from them the whole entire night. They told me it was very strange indeed. The kids just kept their mouths clamped down on their candies. The strangest and most disturbing part was, in the morning, the children who had gotten lollipops were gone.
Oh goodness.
I took the cases because they were so closely related to my case from the PHAA. It wouldn't be that difficult to do both at once. Solving one would hopefully solve the other. James still was very secretive about the basement and kitchen. I couldn't wait for him to trust me, though. I would never be able to forgive myself if the missing children died because I didn't act. So I made a plan. In order to save the children, I would have to sacrifice catching the killer. I could not think of any way to get into the basement without blowing my cover. That would mean either a fight with James or letting him flee. Neither option seemed very favorable, though.
Yeah, when morality and the law don't combine well, it's often a difficult choice.
Oh, I don't think it was a difficult choice. You see, back in my day, we always did what was right, no matter what the law said. I chose to go and save those little kids. If James got away, so be it, but a life would be saved. 4 of them, actually. So here was my plan. I planned to swipe his keys, and then hurry and go see what was in the basement. So, the day of, I decided to work with the biggest, sturdiest broom handle I could, just in case of a confrontation. Then I snuck up behind him and tried to steal the keys. Sleight of hand, however, is not my strong suit. I'm about as smooth as 3-week-old chocolate butter. He noticed, of course, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I ran with the keys over to the door, and I began fumbling with them to unlock it, and that was when I heard a click of a pistol behind me.
Suspenseful moment and a great time to go to an
alley. Wait, no, I'm not finished with my blasting story. So I heard the click of a pistol behind me, and you see, I knew I had to act. He really had no choice but to kill me at that point. I knew too much, and if I told the police, he would be caught in just a couple of days. He could hide my body in the basement where he was probably keeping other illegal things, and I would never be found for weeks, and he'd be long gone by then. It was a bad situation. The only weapon I had at that point was my mind and my mouth. So I took a gamble. Started bluffing. So I said to him, "Well, James, the police are already on their way. I called them this morning before coming into work and told them my plan." And he says to me, "Why would the police believe you or come here?" And I told him, "The police, they have an anonymous tip." And you see, I was improvising at this point, so it probably wasn't as smooth as had I practiced. But it was my only option, you see. They found barrels of dangerous chemicals. And that's when he started getting nervous. Because he realized that if they did find chemicals, then at that point they could get a warrant to search his building and the game would be up. So he hesitated for a second, and I knew he would see right through the lie. But that couple seconds gave me the opening I needed to go and sweep his legs out from under him, take him to the ground, wrest his gun out of his hands. You see, he was a bit older than I was in my 20s at the time, and he was probably in his 40s or early 50s. So I easily overpowered him, but he knew without his gun he couldn't win this fight, so he fled. So at that point I used the keys to get myself into the basement, and, well, you see, first I went to the kitchen, because it was upstairs, and walking downstairs is not exactly the funnest thing all the time. I went into the kitchen, and there was normal recipes, sugar, flavorings, and whatnot. But then something strange, a big barrel of adhesive.
It's a rather weird thing to have in your kitchen.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. This adhesive, and I double-checked with the recipes, and it looked like he was using the adhesive in his lollygags to presumably stick the children's mouth together so that they couldn't talk. And this is when I started to put it together. I hadn't put it all the way together. Next, I went down into the basement. It was dark and dank, and I flipped on a light, and I saw 4 children, sure enough. Thank goodness they were alive, but they had these lollygags stuck in their mouth, and their mouths were clamped together, and they were tied with their hands behind their back, and this is when I put it together completely. James couldn't kidnap the kids when they came into the shop. That would be far too suspicious. And if he tried to kidnap them in their homes, he might be able to do it, but they could scream and tip people off to their kidnapping. So what he did was, when they were in the candy shop, he gave them something, the lollygag, to stick their mouth together so then they couldn't scream. And then that night, he would come and he would take them from their homes and brought them to his basement.
Oh, Satan.
Yeah, that sounds about right, Richard. I don't usually cuss, but... That summed up what I thought. So I took the kids to the hospital. They got the lollygags unstuck with some warm water, thank goodness. And James went on the run, but the police caught him after a few days. And so, yeah, thankfully the kids were safe, and that was a happy ending to our story.
Well, whatever happened to James Hawthorne?
Oh, yeah, so after he was caught by the police, They tried him and found him guilty of kidnapping and using illegal substances and food products. And, yeah, they never figured out why he wanted to kidnap the kids, though. They were going to interview him, but before they could, he took something out of a hidden pocket and stuck it in his mouth. And no, you're probably thinking it was poison. It wasn't. It was one final lollygag, this time made with an adhesive that would not come undone. And it stuck his mouth together until the day he died.
That's an incredible story that you've shared with us today. I'm just trying to figure out, do you know who would have the audacity to make lollipops after such an event?
Well, me, of course. I didn't find it audacious. I thought it was kind of a memorial to my most famous case. I took James's lollygag recipes, removed the adhesive, and I'm still selling candies on a stick to this very day.
That is one bold move, Mr. Rochester.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochester, for joining us today.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, young man.
And thank you to our listeners out there. If you'd like to contact us, you can go to anchor.fm/forigins. And we will see you next time.